It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
This man ate until he burst.
So he did die by eating.
Lunch Hour Reviews.
I'm tainting me.
Tainting me!
It's feeding time.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy, and we are the Rants Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of The Rants Macabre, please visit Fangoria.com.
So in this episode of our Lunch Hour Reviews series, we're going to be covering the first episode of the new show Outcast by Robert Kirkman.
Yeah.
Of The Walking Dead fame.
Yeah. First episode is up for free right now on YouTube.
Yeah, Cinemax.
The rest of it's going to be on people. Cinemax. Which you have to pay for.
The listener can't see your face when you say Cinemax.
I think they know what I mean.
Yeah, Mindy says Cinemax, and everybody else knows that she has in mind the like 1990s late night sort of softcore porn Cinemax. Yeah. Skinemax, as it was known.
Exactly. This is not really that at all. There's no sex.
On a lot of the, there was no sex in Outcast. publicity outlets, Robert Kirkman's been talking about how Cinemax is eager to like rebrand.
Right.
And they've got an original show, Banshee, which I know nothing about.
Me either.
But, this is their second, I think, original show. And yeah, it was a hell of a start.
It's a great start. I mean, clearly it's directed by one of my favorite guys, Adam Wingard.
Yeah.
So how bad can it be? And it can't. It's not. It's very good.
And as it turns out, it's terrific.
Right.
And I think this is one of those projects that he was very quiet on. And
yeah, I didn't
I only
even know this was happening.
After the fact.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently he's been very busy.
Yeah.
But okay, so the first episode is directed by Adam Wingard, who people will know from The Guest, You're Next, segments on the ABCs of Death and the VHS anthologies, and he's currently working on an adaptation of the Japanese manga series Death Note.
All right.
Which, like, manga nerds are very excited that this is the first, like, feature film adaptation.
Fair enough.
I did notice that in the little bit that IMDb does give you in terms of future episodes, Lee Janiak is going to be directing an episode, or actually rather has already directed an episode. Mm-hmm. It's in the can. It's waiting for release. But Lee Janiak did the movie Honeymoon, which actually The Girls in the Back Row just covered recently. And we covered on a Lunch Hour Reviews last year.
Probably.
And we weren't thrilled with it.
It was just nothing new. You know, that was a time when, like, hipster horror, there was so much of this subtle kind of horror. And so I'm kind of almost worried for that episode because everyone's going to whisper and kind of mumble and nothing big is going to happen because that's those movies in a nutshell.
I think considering how intrinsic Robert Kirkman is to the show, I don't think that'll be the case. I think it'll be a nice combination of, like, pensive storytelling and actually really compelling details happening in the background. But let's get into this one.
Kyle Woods is here.
Kyle, is that you?
That must be a sign, I tell you.
You shouldn't have brought me here.
You've been gone a long time. These things are everywhere.
So it stars Patrick Fugit, which I recognize from a couple things. Patrick Fugit is playing Kyle Barnes.
I loved him.
You liked
Risk Cutters. It's one of my favorite movies. Risk Cutters is like really one of my most favorite movies. And I think it's just one of the cutest, weirdest love movies.
It's really Tom Waits plays.
Yeah, Tom Waits is in it. What it's not to like.
Preacher character in
that girl who kind of looks like Angelina Jolie is in it, but she's not. I love that movie.
Yeah, but so he was the kid in Almost Famous. He is the young reporter in that. And he's also in the comedy Saved with Mandy Moore and Jenna Malone.
Which I love that
Macaulay
movie, too.
Culkin. It was a great
movie.
That's
a hilarious movie.
Yeah. So, the opening scenes kind of set the tone. And it's funny, but going back to Lee Janiak, I think it'll work out. The opening credits are like a stripped-down version of The Walking Dead in terms of like establishing scene and location, but it also plays with like upside down imagery and textures.
Which when I was watching it last night, yesterday when we were talking before I had watched it, you said your mom was mixing up Preacher and the show and Outcast. And when I was watching the opening credits, I go, oh, this is why. Because all the Preacher stuff is upside down right now, all the publicity for it.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's why his mom. It's visually very similar.
It could be. Hi, Mom. But yeah, so we open, and the first 5 minutes of the pilot are like truly unsettling.
Yeah, yeah, but it gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
The first 2 minutes are really unsettling.
Yes.
And you think, holy crap. And then a minute later, you go, oh, shit.
Without giving spoilers, it does involve a young boy, and people should know that, okay, we haven't really talked story, but to give a very vague synopsis, Outcast follows Kyle Barnes as a person who has been tortured by those who were possessed in his life. So it starts out when he's a child and his mother is possessed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thank God she doesn't do, like, the like killing horrible type, like really deep end horror stuff. She's a nightmare to live with, and you know it. He spends a lot of time in a closet.
Yeah.
But so from his mother later on in his life, his wife, and we're still finding out exactly what happened to the daughter. But he's in essence been like seemingly stalked by demonic figures, creatures, whatever we're gonna call them. But so for this episode, we're going to talk about the pilot episode of Outcast, but we're also going to go into the idea of demonic possession a little bit, because there's a fascinating amount written on the subject and this sort of modern line blending between demonic possession and like aggressive schizophrenia.
Yeah. And this was another episode where like Mindy and Darren go to the library. And so a little tiny bit of knowledge is really, really dangerous for us.
So just staying on the note of the pilot episode, very quickly we are introduced that this is taking place in Rome, West Virginia, which I had never heard of. It's a small town. It is a religious town in West Virginia. It is a decidedly Baptist town. Sure. And so the church and the local preacher will figure in heavily. I really like the guy they cast for that, and I like the role.
Yeah, I'm kind of... You first are introduced to him while he's gambling. And so you think, oh, like, this is a cool preacher guy. But then his faith runs really deep. You know, you kind of... And again, because I keep going between watching the preacher and this.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep forgetting who's who a little bit. There's too many preachers right now. But this guy's faith actually runs really deep. And he believes it wholeheartedly. Whereas in the preacher, it's not as much.
Yeah, but I think interestingly, and the preacher talks about it very specifically, that his faith is as strong as it is because it's been challenged and because he has seen the things he has seen. And we very early, you know, that poker game is broken up with news that the young boy that we were talking about earlier, you know, that family needs help.
This better be life or death, Florence.
It's Mrs. Austin. Says it's urgent.
I'm out. Past time to call it a night anyway.
That can wait.
Shit. Because they don't understand what's happening to their kid except for the, like, Sunday sermons and the sort of warnings of, you know, corruption. And, you know, I think reading between the lines, one sees, like, demonic possession in there somewhere.
And there is a history of it in this town because we have Kyle's mother and Kyle being from this town originally.
Yeah, and... You know, anybody who grew up in a small town knows that, like, secrets don't stay kept very long.
Especially if someone's, like, acting crazy, crazy pants.
Yeah. So, recently, Robert Kirkman did an episode of The Nerdist where, you know, he was interviewed and he talked about the show. He talked about how a producer at Fox, who was in charge of, like, European distribution, between seasons 1 and 2 of The Walking Dead, came to him and said, like, what's next? What are you working on? And like anybody who's like a writer or just, you know, someone who outputs content, like that's kind of an obnoxious question. But, you know, he's a talker. He's actually he's a lot of fun in interviews. He's great on the Talking Dead.
Yeah, when he does anytime at midnight. He shows up, he's great.
Yeah. So he shared with her a project he was only just in the outlining sketch stage for a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Outcast. And so he's talking about this guy who's sort of like, you know, this put upon tortured figure because everyone in his life keeps getting possessed and he doesn't know, you know, why him, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time he's done explaining, she goes, I'll take it. And he goes, what? Like, that wasn't my pitch. Like, I wasn't coming to you.
Yeah.
She's like, no, let's do it. So like the next couple of days, his agents are getting in touch with him. Like, what did you agree to? Like,
what did you tell this woman?
So as it stands, Robert Kirkman is still a full-time writer on the writing team for The Walking Dead, and he's still writing the comic books
right.
for The Walking Dead. So taking on this extra project, you know, that was twofold because it was the comic and it was the TV show. Like, I don't envy him. Like, that's a pretty big workload. It's
he's
a long
a busy
work
guy.
Day. Yeah. That said, the show's already been renewed for a second season. I think as we're talking to you now, the second episode came out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even before that, this show was renewed for a second season very quick. And they're like proper 10 episode full seasons.
Good. I hate that shit.
That won't be cut in half like The Walking Dead.
And then they like pretend like they're going to kill Kyle in one episode and then leave us for like how many months? 6 months, maybe?
Yeah, so I very quickly, I don't think I knew anything about this before starting watching it, and I think I'm grateful for it, because mm-hmm. they're, in the way that, like, I started reading the Walking Dead graphic novels several years ago, and I kind of enjoyed where the show branches off differently, but this I kind of want to be its own thing.
Well, I sat down and watched it. I made my husband watch it last night with me. Which he enjoyed it, so it wasn't like I was forcing him to watch something terrible. It sounded like that. But he goes, what do you know about this? I go, I don't know anything about this. I know it's Robert Kirkman. I know it's Adam Wingard. That's all I know.
Yeah.
He's like, well, is it supernatural? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't even know the premise of The Possession. I did not know. And I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, yeah. I love a good possession story.
Me too. Like, you know I love good yeah. exorcism, for sure.
Yeah, anything that kind of plays with theology and goes to dark places, sort of. It's funny, in the last couple of years, movies like The Last Exorcist mm-hmm. is fun, you know, minus the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
The Taking of Deborah Logan was
yeah.
a really good
I loved
one
that.
Recently.
I really love that.
Yeah. And recently, I was frustrated by Ava's Possession, which wasn't terrible. It just never rose to the promise of the premise. I actually wrote that out, so I wouldn't get that wrong.
The promise of the premise.
Promise of the premise. In any case, it does have some similarities in terms of playing in a world where demonic possession is a thing that
right.
people know and are familiar with. Ava's Possession's kind of a little more flighty in terms of, like, you know, it's a far more fictional world.
Right.
This story is insular on account of, like, the small town element. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, how much would it shock you, really, if you just, like, pulled over to a small town to get gas and stayed there just long enough to find out that, like, oh, yeah, no, the Baptist preacher exercises people all the time.
I would say, okay.
I'd be like,
yeah, yeah, I wouldn't
right.
be surprised by that.
Thanks, West Virginia.
Yeah. yeah. That's what I expected.
Yeah, so this town revolves around the Baptist church, and, you know, it's important that that is the case because when it comes to exorcisms in the Catholic Church,
right.
there is a whole bureaucracy and a whole rigmarole behind sanctioning, well, I guess first recognizing something as a mm-hmm. legitimate possession.
There are a lot of rules. There's actually set rules. Mm. They were last updated in 1999.
Wow.
And yeah, yeah. So there's like this whole thing about it. But
like, if a kid is trying to get out from going to school, that doesn't count as a proper...
It's very strict. It's very strict. But up until 1999, when they finally revised these rules, you were functioning off of a set of rules if you were clergy from 1614. That's
Jesus.
When the first like handbook was written, which was even beyond Council of Trent. So you think Catholic power is super high at Council of Trent time, right? So that's your 1560s, something like that. I'm not good with that.
All right.
1560, 1580s, Council of Trent. That's the height of, like, let's say Catholic power. And they still didn't have a set rules. They were doing these without rules until 1614. Then they made some rules up. Then they've been using these old-ass rules clear until 1999. And they still do exorcisms.
I was going to say, some of the accounts that you were talking about earlier today didn't sound like they came with rules.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of procedure.
There are a lot of rules. But then, you know, just last year, there was a famous killing in Germany. Some South Korean Germans were doing their own exorcism. Four of them beat a woman to death. I mean, there's
quite a few. But in all fairness, they did get the demon out.
They got it out.
They got everything out.
Clear back in, or not clear back, but
so
you're so gross. In just last year, again, in Belize, a woman was killed, just 22 years old, because her parents saw her playing with a Ouija board.
Mm.
You know, that means. Demons. Dancing with the devil. This 22-year-old died of natural causes, which we come to find out in a lot of exorcism cases, it's called natural causes when they kill these people, not you starve them to death and beat them to death.
And I guess the closest things actually come to looking like a natural cause death is when someone just has a heart attack in the middle of this all this activity
and
dies.
Which is what happens a lot. And that's also what you see in Emily Rose, or the real-life Emily Rose, Annalise Michelle. And that was in the late 70s when that happened. So.
Wow.
So it's not an uncommon thing. People seem to really be into it. But those aren't priests doing, really, these exorcisms. These are just asshole people killing people, calling it an exorcism.
Yeah. So you mentioned the family finding the... It was a daughter with a Ouija board?
Yes.
And so that idea of, like, corruption, and it's funny, it comes up a bunch in, like, the proper documents that we started going through and the papers that have been written, but the idea of a demonization, I don't know. As a sort of lax atheist, I read a lot of those and, was repeatedly frustrated by the sort of... do's and don'ts of what constitutes a legitimate possession, or like, are such things even real?
Right.
But a number of the papers we read were written by like theologians, and you assume, some of them are probably Jesuits.
I would assume, some of these are really, really serious kind of papers. I think one of the heaviest one that we wrote together, or that we read together, was Demon Possession and the Christian by Stephen Carter. And that was one where he says, if it's not in the scripture...
The Old Testament, yeah.
It is not real.
Yeah. So that, again, puts Outcasts in an interesting place, because according to his paper, any like Protestant branch... Calvinist, Baptist offshoots of Christianity should not believe in possession and demon possession and the need for an exorcism.
Right, because
I think that
you being inhabited already by God, let's say, in their way, cannot be inhabited by a demon at the same time.
It's a one occupancy space.
There's only room
head,
for one.
Your heart.
That's it. So yeah, you kind of, if you read it in the same way that he is reading scripture, you can't believe in possession.
Yeah, I think that kind of lends to why this is like a very off-the-books operation with this preacher, because there aren't really... Like, he doesn't have, like, the Catholic Guide, rewritten in 1999.
Updated for the modern world.
But yeah, the talk of demonization and possession, I thought it's not dissimilar to, like, sort of modern takes on... Whether it's analyzing DNA for like a predisposition to addiction, or I thought something is like fucking absurd and basic as like someone telling us like, oh man, I can't drink tequila. Like I go nuts. I can't. It makes me crazy. But like, no, it doesn't. Like that's you. That's
that's you drinking tequila.
That is getting out of control. But going back to like biblical times, demonization could be something as basic as like having like a deep personal flaw, like being blind.
Exactly, because when we were doing this reading, you find out in the Bible they only mention and you're using the word, interestingly, you're using the word demonization, which is a different word actually than being possessed by a demon.
Right.
And it's actually kind of a different translation. So the word like of being possessed or being passively possessed is only 12 times in the Bible. In the scripture. And then six of those times it's talking about Legion, which I found enough about Legion to do an entire show.
Yeah, actually that I'm more and more interested in.
Yeah. And so then the other times it's actually describing disabilities in two of the other instances that it's mentioned, giving you five times only of ever being mentioned, just the word itself being mentioned only five other times, which and out of a lot of words, that's not a lot.
Right. It's funny. I don't know. It's very strange to think that the Bible says more about like demonization than it does about, say, like gay marriage.
Okay.
Or like but yes, so I think in modern day, thank goodness for psychiatry and sort of modern concepts of neuroscience, and so the idea of schizophrenia kind of runs in tandem with this conversation about demonic possession. And so we started looking in on that, and I was reminded of an article, it must have been on the radio a long time ago, but they talked about how Actually, it wasn't that long ago, but they talked about how...
I like that we're going on this timeline journey with you.
My memory is so vague. Although I remember this particular study was talking about the cultural differences in recognizing schizophrenia and the idea that the American concept, you know, the moment it makes it into movies, it becomes a very like dark and gritty thing. It's sort of, it's a reason to like have your character have been evil this whole time around, or like Tyler Durden isn't really there. Like just it's these extreme settings. But when we expand the look and think internationally, Americans are in a very specific place in terms of their relationship with schizophrenia. So let me be specific. In a study published in the British Journal of Psychiatry, they interviewed 60 adults diagnosed with schizophrenia, 20 each in California, Ghana, and India. Mm-hmm. The patients were asked how many voices they heard, how often they heard them, and what the voices were like. There were a number of cross-cultural similarities. Everyone from the Ghanaians to the Californians reported hearing both good and bad voices and hearing unexplained hissing and whispering. But there was one stark difference, as Stanford News points out. While many of the African and Indian subjects registered predominantly positive experiences with their voices, not one American did. Rather, in the U.S., subjects were more likely to report experiences as violent and hateful and evidence of a sick condition. The Americans tended to describe their voices as violent, like torturing people, to take their eye out with a fork or cut someone's head and drink their blood, really nasty stuff, according to the study. Meanwhile, the Indians and Africans were more likely to say that their hallucinations reminded them of friends and family and that the voices were playful or even entertaining. One guy said, mostly the voices were good. I have a companion to talk to.
Wow.
The guy laughs. He says, I need not go out to speak. I can talk with myself.
Fair enough. I think it's very different in the United States because I don't know. I think, well, we live in a society that is rather aggressive, I think, especially in the United States.
Yeah.
Just how we are to each other and how we are even to ourselves.
Everything from like sports to marketing, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's that. I mean,
yeah, and we were just kind of playing armchair psychologist earlier and sort of speculating as to like why is America so different on the spectrum of people with schizophrenia. And I don't know, I kind of speculated that like for as conservative as we are as a country, and you know, there's no getting away from like the puritanical, you know, sense of like, you know, sex is terrible, violence is slightly more okay than sex is.
And butts are very bad.
Now
you'll notice all these instances and say it's because of puritanical shenanigans.
So my sense of, and again, just I'm a complete amateur playing armchair psychologist, but looking at like Ghana and India, yes, I guarantee you there are repressive cultures therein.
Yes.
However, they are far more insular communities, and so you don't get the context to remind you how repressed you are.
Yes.
Like, you don't have the vocabulary for, say, all the, you know, technically outlandish shit you want to do.
Right.
Whereas in America, just there is no getting away from advertising. There, you know, the sex sells component is impossible to avoid.
And oftentimes we do things and know or have in our mind that this is wrong.
Right. So I think people carry around a lot of needless guilt in America. I think that is a uniquely American thing. And, you know, you combine that with, you know, a predisposition or like, you know, a neurological glitch that adds up to schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
And that voice of guilt and shame, you know, becomes a literal voice you hear in your head.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, I mean, I could... you know, I can only imagine having an argument with your own internal self. That's a nightmare.
Right. Because, yeah, I do. I think I sometimes narrate shit because that's like part of the DSM-4 is like if you narrate your own self.
Yeah.
But but it's
so
myself.
So long as you don't do two of the things on the list at the same time.
Then
right?
I'm
that's
good to go. But I love to narrate. I'm like my own like Wonder Years and I just like walk around.
I think
around
if you do
like
it
that.
To song, it's fine. It's just...
Excellent.
I'm doing the laundry, folding the clothes.
Folding the clothes.
You're perfectly
That's number
healthy.
Number one hit. Number one hit, folding the clothes.
So I did find this on Reddit. So I looked through Robert Kirkman's AMA about the show Outcast, and he did bring to people's attention that they were doing like a writing challenge. And it reminded me of back when Twilight Zone was on the air, they made like a national call to like, send us your crazy weird stories.
That's
and
awesome.
One of
yeah.
them might get produced. And eventually one of them did. And so they're doing a similar thing for Outcast. They went to Reddit and the No Sleep community, or / No Sleep. They're, you know, it's constant output from writers, and they're, you know, supposed to be sort of eerie stories. So approaching those fiction writers, they asked to craft a story for the world of Outcast, Robert Kirkman's latest comic book and upcoming Cinemax series. Submit your stories in the comments to enter. We're looking for original stories set in Rome that revolve around a new character of your own creation. The main characters of Outcast can make cameos, but your story should be completely original and focus on telling the story of how your character's life is affected by possession.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's very cool. And yeah. there's like so many creepypasta writers that write some of the scariest shit you've ever read in literally two paragraphs, you
yeah,
know, so
yeah,
I'd be excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, a couple episodes back, our friends at Miskatonic Musings did a whole episode on creepypasta, and I think they must have commented on the No Sleep, because that's kind of like the, you know, more, it's the newer iteration of creepypasta.
Right, right.
But yeah, I thought that was really cool.
It's kind of cool. It's like fanfic, but scary and not about sex.
Yeah, and the pool is so big that, like, Reddit's community is international. So the idea that, like, you are opening invites to a huge pool of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for those people hearing this podcast, like, you should check it out. Reddit, you know, check out the No Sleep community, but specific to the Outcast Cinemax Writing Challenge.
So, like we said before, Adam Wingard was the one directing this, and it was a great episode. There's a couple continuity errors, but it's okay. It's just a pilot, right?
But
what are you going to do?
You're looking at stuff as like traffic patterns or like glasses more full than they were before.
Yeah, but it's important to
blood
me.
Blood on the face. Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. important to me. But I thought the best part, like at the end, The Cure starts playing.
Mm.
And I go, oh, it's Adam Wingard. Like there was no denying it. Like sometimes when I watch his stuff, I think to myself, he just can't help himself. And he really can't. Like, and same thing with Ty West, they do very specific things and you go, you just can't help yourself. And as soon as The Cure came on, I go, what is this? Because it was just the introduction, the instrumental introduction. I go, this is Clan of Xymox. Like, are you kidding me right now? And but it ended up being The Cure, and I was like, Adam Wingard for the win.
Yeah, that said, like, I didn't, you know, it's not an episode I would have assumed, like you heard the music and you kind of, it clicked and it made sense.
Yeah.
There wasn't a point where I was just like, that's so Wingard. Like,
no.
it was just a very well made story. It's a great, like, encapsulated story to start us off with.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward, and I'm excited that, like, you know, visually he set the tone, and this
and
it's a great
looking
show.
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah, you miss certain things from Adam Wingard. Like, I always expect something. I expect to laugh at something that is really probably horribly offensive or I shouldn't be laughing at. Adam Wingard always makes me laugh. He just can't help it, or to be something to be just overly silly.
Yeah.
But it wasn't there until the music started at the end. Then I said, oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I so Patrick Fugit, it's funny that he is a terrific actor. He he does the accent well enough that I don't have a problem with it. But even just in the flashbacks and even the photographs, the difference between him before his life was ruined and him present day where the story takes place, like he transforms. Like it's more than just like a scraggly beard. Like
yeah.
it's just, this is a man fallen apart.
Right.
And so, yeah, I really like him. I'm excited for where the show's going.
Yeah, and definitely, like I said before, check out Wrist Cutters because it's one of my most favorite movies.
Yeah, Wrist Cutters.
A love story.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's it for this this episode of our Lunch Hour Reviews.
Yeah.
We are on all the social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Rants Macabre. And our email is therantsmacabre@gmail.com. We should check that. It's been.
I check it.
Okay.
Again, I got another call to, like, some person in Ghana needs money.
They need an investment to get the money out of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Important. what else? The website is therantsmacabre.com.
Yes.
That's it, right? That's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And while you're listening to this, you could actually do us the favor of giving us a rating on iTunes. It goes a long way in helping us spread the podcast. And we're also on Stitcher and Google Play Music. You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at Fangoria.com. And on that note, congratulations, Ken, as editor-in-chief at Fangoria.com.
Fancy pants.
This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.